The pilot circled around for a while, and everything seemed to be fine. All right. And then they said, okay, now it's time to jettison. Well, any pilot flew up to
pretty high. Winter, about like now, the test was made. And being that they put the regular gas tank, it held 145 gallons, they filled that up.
But that's the only thing that they filled with gas. All the rest they filled with water. So when he came back to operate,
he's jettisoned
valve.
So he had to, they had to
clear out the traffic from
Washington National and
let the son of a gun start way
down the Potomac River
and then freeze it all in finally.
Loaded with wheat,
and the wheat was nothing but ice.
Solid
ice cube. It was a flying ice cube.
Somebody forgot something.
I'm sure that must have cost somebody.
But anyhow,
you started to tell me about
the difference between the air operations officer, who was Foster's,
and Suchak was the air
officer. Yeah.
Well, at that time, I'm pretty sure of the air operations came under the air office.
So, yeah, I see.
Later on, after the war, they had what they call an operations department. Air Ops was under that. But I think back in 42, CIC and Air Operations was under the Air Officer. Foster's memo went via Suchak, so obviously he was
had to be
he was
sure.
right, he was
superior.
Sure.
Yeah, I see.
I was astounded that he would have written that. Why wouldn't it have been?
The thing that surprised me here it is. The thing that surprised me was why didn't the air officer write it?
Well,
I guess it was part of operations.
Yeah, because he, this is where all his information was, in Air Ops.
I see.
CIC.
I see.
That's where the communications with the airplanes are, where the radar was, the fire direction control and all that.
It was all in one place.
All in one place. And Foster was the
honcho
down there.
What was Dobson?
Communications officer.
Communications. Yeah. Would he have had charge of the radar?
Not.
Would he have had charge of the YZB?
Yeah, as far as maintenance and whatnot of it.
See here, it says no point option given, but in lieu thereof, closing of the carrier was indicated, which is, what you said. The ensign's got that, all right, off the teletype thing. But there was no point option. There's no question about that. And Foster verified that again in a letter to me. The thing that really is a puzzle, I want to make sure that you have all of these things in a moment, but the thing that is somewhat of a puzzle to me is who the hell was in that little meeting? What did he really say? I get it from several different sources. that there was. Mitchell, for instance, said, oh, he went to see Captain Mitchell. See, and they discussed whether the fighter should, well, that's Mitchell talking, see. That isn't exactly what happened. There were a lot of other guys at that little meeting, too. But when Mitchell was telling me the story, Mitchell was the guy who went up to see the captain about it. Well, the fact of the matter is that it looks to me, I think Suchek must have been there, or probably was there. But Foster had to have been there. And he thinks, and Foster said, listen, you got to talk to Dodson. That's what Foster said. So that's why I've been on after Dodson, but I haven't been able to get him. And I got off of this. I haven't been on this at all. So I've been too busy. And I'm not getting back on it at all. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied now that I know what happened, or at least I think I do. But there is no question but what you flew at. In my mind, you flew at 260 or 265. There's no question. It was almost due west. Gray indicated that, but he didn't seem to know. But he said it was almost west. And Mitchell said something like that. He said it was due west. But of course, I sent you the thing with Rodee, the conversation I had with Rodee.
Yeah.
There was no question whatever in his mind. And I couldn't even shake him off of it. I interrupted him and tried to get him ahead of time.
But I mean, do you have absolute faith in what Rodee said?
I have absolute faith.
Because I mean, strange.
And I'll tell you why. Not because, I don't know the personalities or anything, see. I'm short there, but a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of other stuff. I'm almost convinced that Rodee is leading everything, and not Ring. Mm-hmm. Right. Prang's book, that's the one thing with Prang, a little variation. Prang said that Ring went out in the middle of the group. In other words, he was leading it, but leading it from the middle.
That's good.
You know what
been,
I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it couldn't have been Johnson. It had to have been Rodee. Then Rodee was it, if that's true. Furthermore, Ring turned around and came back. No question about that. He came back and he landed with nobody. Oh, God, it must have been. Well, Foster said when he came in and all these planes were missing, and Ring had no knowledge of it. Oh, God, it was a disaster.
Must have been.
The psychological impact must have been traumatic. But in any event, the really interesting thing to me is, why the hell did Wall go down that 240? And everybody else do the other. And furthermore,
I can't understand that.
No, and furthermore, you know, Mitchell gave a strong indication to me that they did take different courses.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was very pronounced in his talk to me about, he was positively ordered to go with Ring.
Yeah.
Only Ring, not Walter.
Yeah.
And not Walter. And not Walter.
That's right.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Ring, you're not to go with Walter. Now, if that's true, then those guys had made up their mind in that little meeting who was going where.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think there's more there if anybody ever wanted to really, you know, pursue it, but not that there's anything to be gained, really. But to my mind, I think they left the ship knowing that they weren't going to go together. I'm almost convinced of that.
Yeah, I would say, I read a pretty interesting book, and that's by George Gay, Soul Survivor. You read that?
No, I didn't.
Well, last spring, George Gay, I happened to read some little notice in the back of the paper about George Gay was going to have a lecture over here in Fall River at the Battleship Cove.
Oh!
So,
yes,
and I went and saw George for the first time since Midway. And so we had quite a nice reunion. And he remembered me.
Yeah.
And he gave a very interesting talk. And he had his book that he wrote.
Yeah.
1980, I guess that's when it was published. Mm-hmm. It was for sale, which I bought a copy of and read it with great interest.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he's got an advantage over any other pilot in the whole Air Group 8 because, due to the circumstances, he's been talking and writing about that ever since he got picked up 30 hours after he went in the
thing.
Right.
Right.
So, he's got a wealth of information that he put down. Not only that, he kept it. He was one of these guys like Smokey Stover that kept a diary up to that time of all kinds of little things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and he was the squadron navigation officer, and he mentions that he saw when Waldron came down from seeing the captain. The rest of the squadron commanders, he saw Waldron talked to Gay.
Yeah.
His navigation officer.
Yeah.
He points out that they weren't going to get any fighter protection. And
well, they knew that.
Oh, yeah. They knew. Because I guess Waldron had been, you know, trying to, he even went to the point of, just give us a spare F4F, we'll have one of our pilots fly it. I mean, they really wanted, you know, some protection, but I guess it was Mitchell or who they decided.
Well, Mitchell said that Mitchell would not change it. He said that they had made up their mind.
Yeah.
And they would not change it. Well, that again is a, in retrospect, that doesn't that indicate to you that they weren't going to be together?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they knew they weren't going to be together, or at least Waldron knew he wasn't going to be.
You know, that's what Gay indicates. They weren't. They were going to be last off. They were going to.
Go
on the surface. They weren't going to climb up with the rest of them.
Yeah.
Which, this, you know, sort of, because I've been believing all these years that the torpedo squadron was right up there with us, and I saw them go off. Well, now, obviously, that was somebody else I saw go off. It wasn't the torpedo squadron.
Well, it could have been, or could it? Yes, it could have been the torpedo squadron from the Enterprise.
No,
they were off later.
So,
no. But you were off first.
Oh yeah,
You were way ahead of those other people. it is curious, but. Without being able to nail it down any positive way, I'm just about convinced that Waldron knew he was going out 240 and Ring knew he was going out 265 and Ring knew he was going to turn south and Waldron knew he was going to turn north. And I think that's about how it was.
Well, I mean, I know Waldron obviously was going 240, but that's the information the ship gave us, where the enemy was. Why else would you go any other direction?
That's right. Okay.
That's
right.
That bearing and distance was right. I mean, it was
right.
The distance was a little further.
Yeah.
That was where the enemy was.
Yeah.
Why in the hell you'd go any other direction?
Curious.
I don't know.
Really strange.
So that's, I mean, that's why I say you seem convinced that everybody deliberately went 265, but
yeah.
I mean, Brody says so, but Brody's got some inconsistencies in his conversation with you. Like he says, you know, well, we went out straight 3 hours, 8:30 to.
Yeah.
Well, it was more like 2. Had to be 2.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That he turned around before that. He didn't go out 3 hours.
Yeah.
But that was not as. I know.
Yeah.
When you get nailing it down, it's difficult. Tappan, you see. Now, Tappan was another little guy who's down, that lives right down from me. And I talked to Tappan really first in this whole thing just because he was right there in Baltimore. Tappan was right in the middle of Rodi's bunch.
Mm-hmm.
See? So Tappan has a pretty good, and he's pretty savvy.
Yeah.
He's on the ball, and he said, no. He said, we didn't find him. Hell, we didn't turn south. He said, we turned around.
Yeah.
He said, we couldn't have gone 5 or 10 minutes south. He said, we turned around to the left and came right on straight back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Rodie said. Rodie said, turned right around, came right straight back on the YZB. And then, even the Hornet's log picked him up at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And there was no way they could have been any other place. They could not have flown from down below up to that radar point and come in. Furthermore, Foster said he tracked them out in the beginning. They went right straight through, straight on their course. Right straight on their course, but he didn't give me the course.
Didn't give
me the course. No, he couldn't give me that.
But
he said he went right straight on, but coming back, now you see, Rodie and Tappan both say they went straight out, turned right around, and came right back. There was no ifs, ands, or buts.
The Hornet letter.
Log?
Or 12, no, not the log.
Right.
The report of the action of.
Battle action report.
Yeah. They say the squadron went out on the prescribed course.
Yes.
Well, the prescribed course would have been 240.
No, I don't think there was a prescribed course. Loser? Well, all right, okay. If you want to, no point option given, but in lieu thereof, closing of the enemy was indicated. That's all the whole thing we have that I can see that were there's not that I could find that they were ever given 240.
Well, let's see. I'm sure you got it here.
I don't believe so.
Well,
have you got it?
Yeah.
All
right. Incidentally, Lundstrom did send me about 50 pages or so of his book, and then somewhat later on, Dick Groves, who you communicated
with,
he sent me another 15 or 20 pages, which...
Oh, for goodness.
That he had cut for the static and gave me, which were more about Joe's part of it. Yeah, I thought it was pretty well written.
Oh, Lundstrom?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I really was. Here's something we can refer to, a plaque that we can refer to. And here's the battle action report of the Hornet of Shark.
The Enterprise sure had a lot.
Now the Enterprise.
Better.
Oh, well, she was the flagship. She was really the flagship, huh? And I don't think that was the case of the trouble the whole damn thing. I don't think that it was a coordinated thing.
That's what this lousy thing.
That's a mess.
Yeah.
Mess.
The Enterprise one is very good.
I brought duplicates of that stuff. I didn't know whether I'd be sure to send the other thing that I had or not.
Have you got a pilot chart? Did I send you one of these pilot charts?
No.
Oh, no. This is one of those. And one of these things, this is an overlay. Was it part of what I sent you?
I thought you did, but I guess I think this I also get
some other stuff.
Some from Dick Groves.
Yeah.
Do you recall whether you ever found out the status of Ensign Cook?
No.
Because not Dick Groves, but Jack Nicholson, who's a old friend of Steve Groves.
Yeah.
The last letter I got from him, he wondered if I knew whether Cook was still living or not, or his whereabouts.
I can find anybody. I can find any of them. I have that, I have your flight jacket from Pensacola, and everybody's in it.
Oh, yeah?
Everybody's in it. And that's how I found everybody. I found you, I found everybody right out of that thing. Jesus, it was amazing. I don't remember what you're saying here.
That's what I got from Lundstrom.
Yeah.
And this is more from Lundstrom that wrote something.
Well, if you're not, you've got some information that I don't have. And Lord and Morrison, you understand? Remember, they said, oh yeah, the point option court was 240-155. There's no question about that. And that's true, the Enterprise, that's what the Enterprise gave their people.